into the words United Artists Pictures, Inc. There's a burst of light over the word United. Norway, 1944. In the twilight, German soldiers stand by the gates of a compound. A car pulls up. An officer gets in next to the driver. Two men jump on board, and they set off down the road.
Go! Come see!
In the German camp, soldiers jump on board a tank bearing the insignia of the Iron Cross. Behind the tank is an open-top armored vehicle full of men. The two vehicles roar off into the night. The car picks up another man on the road. Further down the road, a blond man in his 30s watches from the trees. He kneels down beside a detonator. The German car approaches. He twists the detonator switch. Smoke pours from the car and one soldier is flung onto the road. Men fire from the trees. A German soldier runs up. A dark-haired young man, Bergman, drops from the tree above the soldier and knocks him to the ground. He stabs the soldier in the kidneys. Another man disarms a German. Together, Bergman and his comrades flee the scene. The German tank and another car full of soldiers reach the wrecked car. One man examines a body hanging over the side of the vehicle. Meanwhile, Bergman and his comrades run towards a small plane, its propeller already turning. The three of them gather in front of the aircraft. Bergman, the blonde man, and a gruff-looking older man wearing a woolen hat, Johansson. Bergman climbs in beside the pilot. The plane moves away just as the German soldiers appear. Johansson and his friend run into the trees. The Germans take aim at the plane. But it lifts into the air and banks over the trees. The Mirisch Corporation presents Cliff Robertson as Roy Grant, George Chakiris as Eric Bergman. In 633 Squadron. Co-starring Maria Pershey as Hilda Bergman, Harry Andrews as Air Vice Marshal Davis, Donald Houston as Don Barrett. Featuring Michael Goodliffe, John Mellon, John Bonney and Angus Lennie. With Scott Finch, Barbara Archer, Julian Sherrier, Susan Farmer, John Church, Sean Kelly, Jeffrey Frederick and Johnny Briggs. Film editor Bert Bates, production designer Michael Stringer, second unit director Roy Stevens. Sound recordist John Bramall, J.B. Smith, sound editor Teddy Mason, makeup Tom Smith, Wally Schneiderman. Colour by Deluxe, filmed in Panavision. Director of photography, Edward Scaife, additional photography by John Wilcox. Music composed and conducted by Ron Goodwin, executive producer Lewis J. Rackmill. Screenplay by James Clavell and Howard Koch, from the novel by Frederick E. Smith. Produced by Cecil F. Ford, directed by Walter E. Grauman. This story is inspired by the exploits of the Royal Air Force and Commonwealth Mosquito Air Crews during World War II. Fighter aircraft fly in formation over a small village. A woman runs out of the Black Swan pub to watch them. The planes fly over a flag that shows the RAF insignia. They zoom low over an airfield and one by one bank steeply to the left. Another set of planes comes in behind them and bears to the right. Squadron leader Frank Adams comes out onto a balcony to watch them. He's tall and lean, dark-haired, in his early 40s. As the planes come in to land, he goes back inside. Group Captain Don Barrett, also in his 40s with light brown hair and moustache, is leaning out of a window watching the runway. The weather vane on the airfield bay swings slightly in the wind. A black Rolls-Royce glides along a lane lined with barbed wire. A sentry raises a barrier and lets the car through into the RAF compound. The car passes a manned anti-aircraft gun surrounded by sandbags. It pulls up outside a low grey building. Air Vice Marshal Davis gets out. He's in his 50s, tall, with broad shoulders and short fair hair, wearing a light grey uniform. He's accompanied by Bergman in a dark blue uniform. They walk into an office inside. Out on the airstrip, the planes taxi down the runway, turn onto the grass beside it, and come to a standstill. The anti-aircraft gunners stand ready. Two men climb into a Red Cross ambulance, which trundles off across the grass. The planes are Mosquitoes, fighter aircraft that have two large propellers, one in the middle of each wing. The central body is khaki green with a silver undercarriage. The cockpit window is raised a little way back from the plane's snub nose. As the propellers wind down, a technician opens a hatch under the front end of one plane. He pulls down a small metal ladder. Grant climbs out. He's in his 40s, handsome, with short dark hair. He watches ruefully as another pilot, Gillibrand, emerges from his plane. Gillibrand checks the tail and back end of his craft, which are covered in bullet holes. He scratches his sandy blonde hair and smiles.
Hardly touched.
Another pilot appears, young, with wavy blonde hair.
Bring my glove, will you, Evans?
There you are, man.
The next airman to emerge, Singh, is Indian and has a moustache and clipped beard.
Greiner, make a note of that flak tower.
Grant has changed into his officer's uniform. The blonde pilot, Scott, goes over to Gillibrand.
Well done, Dicker.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it?
Got a light, old boy?
Yeah, there you go.
Scott holds up a cigar. He has a hook in place of his right hand. Another man taps his shoulder and points. Grant strides up to them, followed by a line of men. Grant casts his eye over Gillibrand's plane. Gillibrand licks his lips and beams at him.
That, Jerry ammunition truck made a pretty tempting target.
So did you when you broke formation.
How did I know I was going to run into a flak tower?
You know what I'm going to do, Gillibrand?
No, sir.
I'm going to recommend you for a medal.
Well, thanks very much, Skipper. I appreciate that.
When it comes, I'm going to pin it right on your tail.
Hopkinson, short in his 40s, goes up to Grant.
Hey, Roy, what are you going to do on your leave?
I'm going to sleep for 3 days.
Who with?
Me, I'm heading right for Hyde Park.
Why Hyde Park? I thought ducks were out of season.
Not the kind of birds I'm after.
How about you, Scott?
I'm going to go anywhere where I don't have to look at aircraft.
Adam speeds up to them in a small jeep.
Group Captain Barrett wants to see you. He says it's urgent.
Scott, take care of the debriefing.
Right, Skipper.
Grant gets into the jeep, and Adams drives off, making his way past a large hangar towards HQ, the low grey building. Inside, a female officer walks past Barrett and holds the outer door open for Grant.
Thank you.
Hello, Roy.
Don, what's happening?
We've got visitors.
He knocks on the office door.
Sir, come in, Barrett.
Grant and Adams follow Barrett inside and salute to Davis.
This is Wing Commander Grant and Squadron Leader Adams, Air Vice Marshal Davis and Lieutenant Bergman. Glad to meet you, Grant.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
How are you?
Well, sit down, gentlemen. Congratulations, Grant. I hear today's operation was a great success.
Well, we all got back, sir.
Good. Anyway, there'll be no more operations for your squadron for the next 17 days.
You mean we're on leave, sir?
No, I don't. All leave is cancelled until further orders. 633 Squadron are assigned an urgent, most secret operation. Your men are going into training for it, and that's all they need know for the present.
You mind if I ask a question?
Yes.
Why our squadron?
What do you mean?
Some of our men have been on 12 strikes in the last 2 weeks. They're pretty tired, sir. They were looking forward to a leave.
Unfortunately, they'll have to wait for their leave. All leave is cancelled. Since you took over, your squadron has attained a high degree of efficiency. You can look upon this assignment as a reward.
I'll try to, sir.
Bergman smiles.
Now, for the operation. As you know, the Germans have been building mysterious concrete blocks all up and down France and Belgium. At long last, intelligence have come up with the answer to what they are. They're rocket launching pads. Yes, The Huns have got a new operational rocket.
D-Day is imminent. These rockets could smash the invasion. And they're ready by the thousand. Why don't they use them? Fuel. Without very special fuel, these rockets would be so much scrap. Now we come to why Lieutenant Bergman is here. He's one of the leaders of the Norwegian Ling, the resistance. They've discovered the location of the only factory the Nazis have at present which can make fuel for these rockets. It's at a fjord just north of Bergen. Here's Bergen. Here's the fjord. It's called the Svartsa Fjord, the Black Water Fjord. Now, as to the exact location of the factory, I'll let Lieutenant Bergman tell you.
Davis lifts up a map of the fjord.
First, I must explain that the factory itself is not the target.
It's not the target.
No, the factory is bomb-proof. It is also sheltered by a huge cliff.
Well, then what do we bomb?
You bomb the mountain.
You blow away the whole overhanging cliff so that it buries the factory.
I should explain, too, why you cannot bomb from above. The underground have brought in geologists to study this mountain, and there is a fissure underneath the overhang. If you explode from below, the entire overhanging cliff will come down, or so we hope.
The only way you can get into position is to fly up the fjord at about 200 feet. The Huns have flak posts at the mouth of the fjord. At 200 feet, you'd be blown to hell, which brings me back to Bergman. At an exact hour on M-Day, the day of our mission, Bergman and his men will neutralize the enemy flak posts. If all goes well, Grant, you should have a clear run up the fjord.
If all goes well.
The factory will be shipping fuel in 18 days. Your special bombs will be ready in 17. Today is M-minus 17. Your orders are to obliterate the target at whatever cost.
Bergman glances at Grant, who looks stoically at Davis.
Any questions? Lieutenant Bergman will be working closely with you. He knows the target well.
What are we going to practice on?
Well, we found a valley in Scotland. It's not nearly as tough as the fjord, but it's the best we can do. Barrett?
Sir.
This gives you exact schedules and routes to the training site. Training to commence immediately. Well, I think that's all, gentlemen.
Grant gets up.
Oh, Adams, will you see that Lieutenant Bergman finds suitable quarters?
I certainly will, sir.
Nice to have you with us, Lieutenant.
Thank you very much.
Grant leaves the building, saluting the sentries on duty. Bergman follows him outside.
A wing commander. I just wanted to tell you how pleased I am. You were the one they chose for this operation.
I'm glad you are, Lieutenant. I wish I felt the same.
You give me the impression of being able to do very difficult things.
I do what they tell me to do.
But this is terribly important.
That's what they always say.
Grant starts walking.
You sound so cynical.
Do I?
You have not seen the Nazis at close range.
Close enough.
In the air, yes. But I have seen them in my own country, torturing and killing innocent people.
So you want to bury them under that mountain, huh?
Yes. Help in the war?
Look, Lieutenant, as long as we're working together, we might as well understand each other. We'll do the best job we can, but as far as I'm concerned, it's a job, not the Holy Grail, okay?
I will try to remember that.
You do that.
Grant turns and walks away. Adams pulls up in his Jeep.
Climb in, Lieutenant. I'll drive you to your quarters.
Thank you.
Scotland. Inside, Grant sits in the pilot's seat with Hopkinson beside him. They fly over a steeply curving grass slope covered in scree. Grant spots a white cross placed on the cliff in front of them.
X! Mark the spot!
They zip right past the cross, mere feet away from the rock. The plane turns slightly as it follows the curve of the valley walls upwards. They seem to be heading straight for a cliff face. But Grant climbs steeply and zooms over the top. They fly past a lock on the other side.
Our climb is slow. We'll have to increase our approach speed to 290.
How are we going to bomb the target even if we get the right approach speed?
That's what we're here to find out.
The plane banks sharply to the right. They fly low over a thin river that meanders along the floor of a U-shaped valley.
horses already and each one's a bus. Skipper, just let's sit this one out, eh?
Don't you trust me, Hoppy?
Oh, like my dear old mum, but this one's a bit dicey.
I thought you wanted to see Scotland.
Yeah, but not upside down.
The view of the cross from the cockpit window becomes the image on a cinema screen. The film ends and the lights go up.
You had a good day, Grant.
Not good enough. I'll try it again tomorrow.
Well, that's yesterday, today, tomorrow. That's 3 days already out of your 17, Roy. Perhaps you'd better take the squadron.
All right. I wish there was somewhere to see that target.
I could describe it to you. Every detail.
Grant turns to Adams.
Hey, wasn't Bissell an artist?
A pencil drawing of some cliffs.
The center peak is higher.
This one?
Yes. And the cliff hangs over more.
Fine.
The artist, Bissell, is young with wavy brown hair.
Now, what's this all about, Skipper?
You'll find out soon enough.
I see, sort of an hush-hush.
Well, you sure that's the way it is? I mean, as you remember it?
Yes, that's as good as a photograph.
Good. Thanks, Bissell.
Sir.
Oh, Bissell, how you making out with Mary? What's her name?
Mary Blake.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of hush-hush, but, we're going to get married.
Bissell leaves.
He's out of his head.
Don't you approve of war marriages?
No, not for me.
You don't want any, attachments?
That's right. How wide is that fjord at that point?
Not over 200 yards.
Mm-hmm. What's on the other side of the fjord?
A lake. A large lake.
Bergman starts drawing on Bissell's sketch.
What's that?
A sailboat. My sister Hilda and I used to go sailing there. She's in England now.
He draws a boat.
How'd she get out of Norway?
We smuggled her out in a fishing boat just after our parents were killed. And your parents, Roy, where are they?
My parents? My mother's dead. I haven't seen my father since I was a kid.
Well, I have been more fortunate. At least my memories before the war were happy ones.
What'd you do before the war?
I was studying to become a doctor until the Nazis came. Instead of learning how to cure, we learned how to kill.
German soldiers on motorbikes lead a convoy of cars and trucks through a Norwegian village. The blonde resistance fighter waits on a wooded slope, armed with a gun. With him are Johansson and another man. Johansson watches through binoculars as the convoy passes along the plain below them in the distance. The blonde man chews nervously on a piece of grass. Johansson indicates that they should go back up the slope. Other resistance fighters are gathered in a cave lit by a fire. They sort through boxes of armaments. Johansson pulls back a camouflage frame that covers the entrance.
I was sent word.
The blonde man runs inside and goes over to a radio. He puts on some headphones and starts tapping out a signal in Morse code. His comrade watches anxiously and turns to Johansson.
With all these reinforcements, do you think they'll call off the attack?
No. Not if Eric can help it.
Johansson turns and addresses the other men.
There are many more Germans. We have spread ourselves thin and start 24-hour patrols.
The blonde man continues tapping out the signal. It's night at the RAF camp. A soldier on a motorbike escorts a black Rolls-Royce to headquarters. Davis gets out of the car and salutes to the sentries on duty before heading inside. In the office, Bergman watches as Grant lights Adam's cigar.
Thanks.
Barrett lets Davis into the room.
Stand easy, gentlemen.
I've called you here because I've just had a message from intelligence. The Germans have moved in another entire regiment and a string of AK-AK vehicles a mile long right into our target area.
Bergman looks alarmed.
Our underground cannot possibly knock out another German regiment, sir. We have not enough men.
Then we'll have to get some more.
If we can, they will need training.
What about a parachute attack?
It would not work. There is no place for them to land or to group.
Commanders, then, there must be some way they can work their way into the fjord.
There is no way. We have discarded that idea a dozen times.
Then we'll have to send in more men, whether they're trained or not.
Could we have more time?
There is no more time. M-Day stands.
Well, in that case, we will do the best we can.
Davis nods.
Well, Grant?
I didn't say anything, sir.
No, but I could hear you thinking. Under the new circumstances, are you willing to go in?
Are you asking me to volunteer?
No, damn it, I'm not. I'm giving you an order.
In that case, I volunteer.
A shot from a plane hits the cross on the cliff, bang on target. Grant is the pilot, joined in the cockpit by Bergman. Grant flies fast and low over the cliffs.
How'd we do?
Perfect. Wish I'd have been the Germans down there.
Three planes fly in formation above them. Grant speaks into his flight mask.
Try and match that. Speed 295, dead on. Altitude 200 feet and keep it low. Peel off in this order. Scott. Gillibrand. Take.
Scott is in the cockpit with Evans, a dark-haired man in his late 20s.
I don't know why you ever left that coal mine. Well,
that's what I could do with right now. A nice, steep, cozy coal mine.
If I make a mess of this, you'll be deeper than any coal mine.
Scott. Tail.
Scott banks to the right and plunges downwards. In Gillibrand's cockpit.
Gillibrand.
Gillibrand repeats the same maneuver. Singh banks to the left and slowly turns into a dive. Scott's plane roars down the U-shaped valley.
No!
Evans hits the fire button. The plane shoots past the cross and heads towards the cliff face. Scott pulls back on the yoke, and the plane zooms upwards and over the rocks. Evans sighs with relief. Now Gillibrand heads towards the target. On the ground, officers watch through binoculars. The plane flies low over the river, snaking across the valley floor. Gillibrand tweaks the yoke to the right and takes the fire button from his co-pilot, Bissell. A canister full of chalk hits the rocks and explodes just under the cross. Bissell closes his eyes as they head towards the cliff. Gillibrand cuts it very close, but they make it.
You fool! You bloody Australian fool! I'm getting mad. Try and remember that, will you?
How can I forget it? I was figuring on getting the widow for myself.
Oh, I love your raw colonial humour. Bloody aborigine.
In Grant's cockpit.
Too close, Gillibrand. Pull up sooner.
Okay, give up.
You think they're ever going to get it?
Give them a week, they'll get it.
The four aircraft come in to land at an airbase with two large hangars. A man waves the planes forward until they're stationary. The last plane touches down on the runway. Technicians put chocks in front of the wheels. Grant and Bergman are helped out of their craft and handed their uniforms. They walk back to base, wearing their bomber jackets and officers' caps. They pass technicians repairing the wings of a plane. Suddenly, one of the technicians looks up, alarmed. Two planes zoom low over the airfield. Bergman and Grant start running. The planes open fire, and one of the Mosquitoes bursts into flame. Grant runs to his right, followed by Bergman. The planes return for a second attack. Grant pulls Bergman down onto the grass just as machine gun fire tears into the dugout in front of them. Singh and his co-pilot fling themselves to the ground. Meanwhile, Grant and Bergman make it into the dugout.
Thanks.
What?
You saved my neck.
Well, why shouldn't I?
You're damn lucky they didn't get you.
A plane strafes the ground in front of the dugout. Anti-aircraft gunners fire on the enemy craft. Scott and Evans dive under an ambulance as technicians flee towards the airbase. Some fuel barrels explode. Three men run towards a gate, but are cut down before they can reach it. Explosions erupt across the airfield, and the fleeing staff are thrown to the ground. A Mosquito comes in to land. Its two crew look back through the cockpit window and see an enemy plane bearing down on them. Bullets smash through the cockpit window and the two men slump dead in their seats. Their plane continues moving, trundling over the grass towards a fuel truck. The truck bursts into flame and the plane tilts over it, nose on the floor. The enemy planes fly off into the distance. An ambulance and two red fire engines race to the scene. The cockpit of the plane is now burning. Grant and Bergman jump onto the sides of a passing truck, which speeds off across the grass towards the pall of black smoke rising into the sky. RAF staff all in uniform. Bissell sits with a young blonde woman, holding her hand and looking into her eyes. Scott is talking to two colleagues.
Oh, no, listen. There I was, with this Messerschmitt coming in at 12 o'clock. I was out of ammunition.
What did you do then?
Well, I opened the old escape hatch, reached up, grabbed him by the tail and pulled him down.
The barmaid gets up on a chair to reach a shelf. Gillibrand lifts two glasses to his eyes and looks at her legs.
Now, there's a really beautiful sight.
Haven't you seen a pair of legs before, you big ape?
Oh, not like yours, sweetheart.
What's the matter with you, Aussies? Don't they let you see girls till you're over 40?
They don't have girls down under.
Down under what?
She walks out from behind the bar carrying two pints. Immediately, the men are all over her, hugging her waist and trying to get a kiss. Scott's among them.
I'll ask you to step aside, sir.
Oh, I'll step aside, Rosie, if you'll step outside with me.
Don't you listen to him, love. We're going to live in Australia and raise kangaroos.
No, don't listen to him, Rosie. Marry me.
Belt him one in the face.
Oh, you don't need a poor lad with only one hand.
Oh, it depends what he's doing with it.
Sing.
Break it up, boys. Come on, Rosie. I will see you through.
A gentleman at last. Here we are, love. Keep hale and hearty till you're 90.
That's our aim, Rosie.
Hale and hearty till we're 90.
Two young airmen.
What do you suppose those special bombs are for?
Not what.
Who? I got it straight from the adjutant's WAP. They've got a paper hanger. Berchtesgaden. Wow.
And one of these bullets could be right on the head. This medic came up to me and said, shall I take you to the infirmary, sir? I said, no, but you can drop this off at the garage.
Scott holds up his hook. Suddenly, the men at the bar notice someone at the door. It's a beautiful young blonde in a bright red dress. She smiles and sits down at a table alone. Scott.
That's for me, just my type.
Oh, yeah? What makes you think you're going to get first crack?
Rank, old boy.
Excuse me.
Scott pushes past Gillibrand and adjusts his tie. He crosses to the woman's table and leans against an oak beam. She looks up, smiling.
I wonder if I might entice you into joining me for a drink, my love. What?
Bergman comes in. She runs to embrace Bergman, leaving Scott standing.
Oh, 3 years.
You know, sometimes I was so afraid that I might never see you again.
You know me better than that.
Of course. Now let me have a look at you. What a fine uniform. The Navy, isn't it?
Yes. Unfortunately, a Navy without ships.
I don't care. As long as you're safe here and not in Norway.
I think we've broken up the party. Let's go into the parlor.
Oh, I have so many questions to ask. I don't know where to start.
He takes her outside.
Some chaps have all the luck.
Don't be silly. That's Lieutenant Bergman's sister.
Hopkinson.
I've got a sister. Would you like to see a photograph?
Oh, what use is a photograph? Anyway, she probably looks like you.
Hey, same again, Mr. Kemp. Yeah. This round of my sister, eh?
Oh, hey, Rosie. How about some music?
Rosie turns on the radio.
Who's next, then?
Oh! Welcome aboard!
Grant comes in, a woman on each arm. Grant staggers tipsily. He brings the women over.
What are you drinking, Skipper?
What do you got?
Whiskey?
That's ordinary.
Hey, girls, girls, girls.
How did you manage to break out of the barracks?
Roy brought a ladder, didn't you, Roy?
Second story work.
Here, girls. You've arrived just in time to make your party complete.
Here's two girls.
Yeah, all of them.
Haven't met all of them.
You haven't met Bergman's sister. She's in the other room.
Here's the one I haven't met.
In the other room?
Go on.
Well, that is about all there is. That is how I got to England.
And now you work for the English?
Yes, with an RAF squadron as liaison officer. But that's all I'm permitted to tell you. But enough about me. What have you been doing?
Well, I have been working in the country with children who have been sent out of the bombed areas.
Grant comes in.
Oh, Roy. Come in. I would like you to meet my sister, Hilda. Wing Commander Grant.
How do you do?
How do you do? I was just drinking a toast to you.
Thank you. My brother has just been telling me about you.
You're the girl in the sailboat, aren't you?
Sailboat?
Yes, I was telling Roy about the times you went sailing on our lake. You remember?
Oh, yes, I remember, but I felt much younger then. The last 3 years seemed more like 300.
You're a mighty pretty old lady.
Thank you again. But you don't have to pay me compliments, Wing Commander. Just take care of my brother.
Oh, yeah, well, we take care of each other. You know, kind of mutual aid society.
Roy?
Hmm?
Your drink's getting warm.
Oh, excuse me. I was just looking for you.
I bet you were.
Grant and the woman walk out.
Is that his fiancée?
You would be amused to hear you say that. No, I don't think he takes her too seriously.
Well, I feel he doesn't take anything seriously.
But they are all like that, different from us. The more they feel something, the less they show it. Today in that raid, some of their friends were killed, and tonight they are drinking, very gay.
And you feel that he is dependable for whatever it is you're doing?
Oh, yes. Completely.
Next day, Bergman jumps down from a truck and runs to his plane.
Morning.
Bergman takes his flight gear from a technician and climbs into the plane. The chocks are pulled away and a man waves the plane forward. The other planes inch forward towards the runway. Grant's plane lifts into the air. Now Gillibrand's craft speeds down the runway. Scott follows him into the air. In the plane behind him is the young airman from the bar, Jones. He has fair hair and blue eyes. Gillibrand soars over the white cross on the rocks. Grant speaks into his flight mask.
Good hit, Gillibrand. Roger, ask him.
Scott's plane flies towards the cross. He pulls the yoke hard to the right and leans over to Evans. They zip past the cross.
Blue leader to Jones. You're up. Clobber it.
Jones banks to the right and heads down the U-shaped valley. Grant watches from above. Officers observe from the ground as Jones' plane zooms over their heads. Jones approaches the cross, holding the fire button himself. He clears the cross and grins. But, as he flies towards the steep valley walls, he sees the cliff face too late. He pulls hard on the yoke, but the plane crashes straight into the rocks and bursts into a ball of flame. The officers on the ground run to their jeep. Bergman is beside Grant in the cockpit of his plane.
What went wrong? And luck ran out. Blue leader to squadron. Formant Scott, return to station.
The three remaining planes slowly descend in a triangular formation. Grant banks to the right and turns once again into the U-shaped valley. He skims over the cross and clears the cliff face easily, Jones's craft enveloped in flame beneath them. Back at base, Grant stands in his room, holding a slip of paper bearing the names J. Jones and G. Frank. He throws it on the fire in his stove. Grant stares at the fire motionless.
Come in.
It's Bergman.
Sorry to disturb you, Roy. I wanted to speak to you.
Come on in. What's up?
I've come to say goodbye.
Goodbye?
Yes. Davis had word from the underground. They have not been able to raise enough men. They're dropping me in tonight.
Well, how are you going to get more men if there aren't any?
Well, there is a unit operating in the mountains just north of the fjord. I might be able to bring them down.
If you can get by the German lines.
Yes.
Grant picks up the phone.
Hello, this is Grant. Give me operation.
He turns to Bergman.
I'll fly you in.
They've already assigned a Mitchell.
The hell with the Mitchell. I'll fly the drop. Hello, Jerry. Get my ship on the line. I'm making a drop tonight. Right.
You should not take unnecessary risks.
Look who's talking.
I would like to see Hilda before I go.
All right. We'll pick her up after I talk to Davis.
We'd planned on going to the party tonight. The one for Bissell and Mary.
Oh, yeah. They get married, aren't they?
Hmm.
It's funny. Two die, two get married. Kind of even syncs up.
I thought you were against marriage.
I'm also against death. But it happens anyway.
Grant visits Davis and Barrett at headquarters.
I'd feel a lot better if I could fly him there myself, sir.
I've ordered a Mitchell to fly him in and make an arms drop at the same time.
Oh, could I fly the Mitchell?
You're grounded until M-Day.
Grounded? When did that happen?
I've just made the decision. Scott can lead the remainder of the practice flights.
What kind of a decision is that?
Well, boy, it's just that you're too important to risk.
Grant and Davis glare at each other. Grant turns towards the door.
Is it all right if I drive him to the airplane, or is that too great a risk?
We'll take a chance on that.
Thank you, sir.
Outside, technicians are working on the Mitchell plane. It's bigger than the Mosquito, white with a silver undercarriage and two large propellers. There is a window in the nose cone, with a second cockpit window raised above it. Men take arms crates to the cargo doors in the bottom. Grant pulls up in a jeep with Bergman and his sister Hilda. Bergman grins as the cargo doors close.
When the war is over, we can take Roy sailing on our lake. Will you come, Roy?
Sure, I'll come.
And we can go fishing, like before. You like to fish?
Yeah, I like to fish.
Good. That will be something to look forward to, Hilda?
Her eyelids flutter, and she presses her face against his chest. He holds her close. Grant stands by the driver's seat and watches them. Bergman steps down from the jeep and lifts Hilda out onto the tarmac. They embrace. Hilda's headscarf flutters in the wind. They kiss each other affectionately on the cheek.
Adieu, dear Hilda.
Adieu, Eric.
Take good care of her, Roy.
Good luck when you hit that ground.
And to you. In the air.
Bergman takes his parachute and walks over to the Mitchell. He takes one last look at Grant and smiles. Bergman climbs through a hatch in the bottom of the plane. Hilda puts her hands in her pockets and watches, her shoulders heaving. The plane turns onto the runway. It lifts into the air. Grant climbs back into the Jeep, Hilda beside him in the passenger seat.
Are you angry with me?
No, why should I be angry?
You just don't seem to be friendly.
Hell, I'm friendly. I just got a lot on my mind, that's all.
And now you've got me besides. Is that what you were thinking of?
No.
I promise I won't be a bother, but one favor I have to ask you. Let me know if there's some news about Eric.
Sure. Give me your address and I'll let you know.
I'm going to stay here until I know he's safe.
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not?
Well, there are a lot of hungry characters around here.
I think you do not understand. Eric is all that's left for me in the world, and now he's gone.
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry.
He reverses the Jeep across the grass, then turns onto the road that leads back to base. Outside the Black Swan, Gillibrand ties some cans to the back of a car daubed with the words, "Just Married." Scott is kissing a woman in a blue dress.
Oh, pardon me.
Happy days, old boy.
And nights.
Rosie! Rosie!
I'm coming.
Oh, come on, lover, or the Playman Bubbly will be gone.
How about these things?
Is that all you could get?
All I could get. There is a war on, you know.
You could have filled me, love. I'm going to get some more tin cans.
He runs off, leaving Rosie standing there with an armful of shoes. Grant and Hilda pull up in their Jeep.
Sounds like quite a party. You want to join?
No, I'm not in a party mood. I think I just got to my room.
All right.
Oh, you don't have to see me in.
I promised Eric I'd take care of you.
Oh, I know what it is. You don't want to throw me to those hungry characters.
That's right.
Singh bursts out the door.
Here comes the boy! Sure, the boy!
Bissell and Mary run outside. Grant kisses the bride.
Good luck, Bissell.
I brought my luck with me.
Bissell kisses Mary and they run over to their car. The others chase after them, showering them with confetti. Hopkinson lies on the roof of the car as it pulls away. Grant smiles.
Don't worry, it's not contagious.
You sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Well, good night, and thank you.
Good night. Oh, Hilda.
Hey, yes?
I've been grounded.
Grounded?
Well, that means that I won't be flying for a couple of days, and I was wondering if tomorrow you were free, maybe you...
If you're inviting me, the answer is yes.
They smile at each other.
Good night.
Hilda goes inside. Grant turns to watch the wedded couple's car, a grin appearing on his lips. In Norway, Johansson and his blonde colleague watch from the undergrowth as the Mitchell plane approaches. Johansson checks his watch and nods at his comrade, who starts flashing a Morse signal with his torch. Bergman leaps from the plane and his parachute opens. The man continues to flash his torch. Bergman plops down in a grassy meadow. The two resistance fighters run forward. Bergman unties his harness and takes off the parachute. He looks up sharply and grabs his machine gun. Hurriedly, he loads the magazine clip that also acts as a side handle. He raises the weapon. His two comrades appear through a gap in the fence in front of him.
Eric! Eric!
Bergman relaxes as the two men run forward.
It's good to have you back. Are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
They drop to the floor. A motorbike and a small German tank pass by on the road. The men on the tank shine a searchlight across the meadow. The three resistance fighters gather up the parachute and run for the trees. The tank makes its way down a country lane. Bergman and his comrades lean against a wooden fence, weapons raised. The tank approaches slowly, the searchlight still probing the trees. Slowly, the tank passes the resistance fighter's hiding place. Bergman turns to the others.
They haven't patrolled here before?
It happened 3 days ago. They're all over the place.
20 hostages were shot yesterday before a bridge gulf blew up. You had orders. No attacks. His sister was raped. We must bury the chute.
He starts digging at the ground with his knife. Blonde man wearing a black woolen cap. Bergman is beside him in the passenger seat.
With all the German patrols, it would be better to wait till dark.
We can't. The weapons must get through to the other units.
Ahead, they spot a roadblock manned by German soldiers. Bergman puts a firm hand on the driver's arm.
Easy.
The driver rests his hand on the gear stick, while Bergman pulls the pin out of a grenade.
Slow down at the barricade.
A German soldier holds up his hand. The truck knocks the soldier flying. Bergman hurls the grenade into a machine gun nest, and the truck plows through the barricade. Resistance fighters lean out the back and open fire. A German tank sets off in pursuit, while soldiers take aim on the truck. The truck speeds away. The tank is hot on its tail, a machine gunner standing in the turret, and other men riding on the outer shell. The machine gun bullets pierce the back of the cab and hit the truck driver. Bergman leans over and grabs the wheel, but he loses control of the truck, and it slides over the grass verge and tips sideways, crashing onto the ground. Bergman climbs out the window, carrying his gun. His comrades bolt out of the back of the truck. The tank approaches, and Bergman hurls a grenade. It explodes just in front of the tank.
Over the bridge, I'll cover you!
Bergman and Johansson hide behind the upturned truck and give covering fire. One of their comrades is cut down by enemy bullets.
Go on, over the bridge!
Bergman holds off the Germans alone, as Johansson and another resistance member flee the scene. Bergman grabs their dead colleague, heaves him over his shoulders, and carries him up towards a low rock wall. But bullets cut them down, and they roll back down the slope. German soldiers run forward. They haul Bergman to his feet. A sergeant holds a rifle up in front of Bergman's face.
Haben Sie das bekommen? Sagen Sie mir! Go! Go!
He rams the rifle butt into Bergman's leg. A beautiful lake in the sunshine. A swan glides past some lily pads. A man steers his rowing boat under a redstone bridge. Grant and Hilda sit on a picnic rug by a willow tree, whose branches lean over the water. Grant is fishing when a Mitchell plane flies overhead.
What did you do before the war, Roy?
I was a barnstormer.
Barnstormer?
Yeah, you know, aerial circuses, aerobatics, things like that.
Now you fly in the war. Do you hate the Germans?
I never met any. The only ones I've ever seen have been through a gun sight. Not the best way to get acquainted.
Then why did you enter the war so early?
Well, I had to do something. The air circus folded, so I joined the Eagle Squadron.
She lies on her side, facing him.
It was different with me. Where I grew up, everything was very safe.
I got one.
Oh, bring him in before he gets away.
No, he might throw the hook. The idea is to give him a little bit of play.
He pulls in a tiny fish.
Oh, it's a sardine. It's a Norwegian sardine.
How do you get over here? All right, little sardine, back to your fjord. Now, here. You want to take that over there? Straighten the line out.
Hilda unravels the line.
That's it. Get it straight now.
Grant smiles as he watches her.
Hey, you're very good.
I used to do it for the fishermen, and sometimes they even took me out on the boat with them.
She pulls the line over to the reel, coming close to Grant. They gaze into each other's eyes. Grant kisses her, and she clutches his shoulder. Back at base, Grant walks into his room and finds Barrett there.
Hey, Don. You're up late.
Roy, they've captured Eric. The Gestapo's got him. And they've had him since 8 this morning. You know what that means. They'll work on him. And they'll break him down and they'll make him talk. This whole operation's in danger unless we can stop it.
How?
We know the building they've got him in. Gestapo headquarters in Bergen. This building must be bombed. We believe that a single mosquito might get through tonight and stop him.
You want a killer, right?
We need a man to do a job.
You want a killer.
Listen, Roy. Do you remember Charlie, that collie I used to have? Do you remember how we nursed him when he was run over by a lorry? But it was no good. He was in pain, so I had to shoot him.
I don't care about your canine love stories. We're talking about a man's life.
We are talking about many men's lives.
Grant looks down sadly and turns away from Barrett.
I'm grounded, remember?
That order can be rescinded in the circumstances.
What circumstances?
If you should happen to volunteer.
Grant turns to face him.
Is there a choice?
Yes.
It's a hell of a choice.
Grant walks around the room, smoking a cigarette.
Who'll be my navigator?
Bissell's volunteered.
Okay. Tell him to get my plane ready. I'll be out in about a half an hour.
We'll be waiting for you.
Barrett leaves the room. Grant walks slowly over to the telephone. He rests his hand on the receiver, pauses for a moment, then lifts it to his ear.
Give me the Black Swan.
He listens for a moment, then puts down the receiver. He turns and pulls his bomber jacket off the door peg. In her room at the Black Swan, Hilda is in her nightie, arranging her dress on a hanger. She draws the curtain and throws open the windows. At the airfield, the Mosquito's propellers start to turn. The plane inches forward. In her room, Hilda breathes deeply, looking out into the night. Davis, Adams and Barrett come round the corner of the headquarters building and watch the plane move down the runway and lift up into the sky. Davis looks ruefully at his fellow officers. Then he checks his watch and walks away. In her room, Hilda still stares out of the window. Slowly, she collects herself and pulls the curtains closed. Meanwhile, Bergman is lying on some straw in a darkened room. The door opens, and a woman is silhouetted in the doorway, her jacket hanging loose over her shoulders. Her hair is blonde and hangs in a bob. She wears a white shirt and black tie. She stands over Bergman and smiles. The light goes on behind her, and she's joined by a German officer.
How are you feeling, Lieutenant?
He looks sweaty and bedraggled.
Very sociable. Listen to me, Lieutenant. I'm going to ask you some questions. You will have to answer them sooner or later. You will save yourself much pain by answering now. What were you doing in England, and whom did you see there?
I was not in England.
Oh, come, Lieutenant. Those canisters and weapons we found.
I know nothing about them.
You are insulting our intelligence. We will try something nearer home. What is the location of your underground headquarters?
I have nothing to say.
Surely you will not deny you are a member.
I have nothing to say.
I'm afraid we shall have to persuade you. Take off his clothes.
two officers move forward and take Bergman by the arms. The woman rips off his shirt. At RAF HQ, Davis is on the phone.
Advise intelligence, one aircraft dispatched en route to pre-designated Norwegian target.
Barrett comes in.
Yes. I can be reached here at Sutton Craddock Operations.
The Mosquito flies over the sea. In the cockpit, Bissell points out the window and Grant nods. They're approaching the entrance to a fjord. Back at base, Davis checks his watch in front of the operations board. Adams examines a map of Norway.
He should be just crossing the coast now.
If Bergman talks...
He won't talk. We'll know soon enough.
In the German HQ, Bergman is strapped to a table, a metal band round his head.
Go on, Lieutenant. What else?
He breathes heavily.
Well, Lieutenant?
She nods at her colleague, a bald man in uniform. The man takes a surgical instrument and applies it to Bergman's feet. Bergman grimaces in agony. Outside, Grant's plane approaches the base, and anti-aircraft gunners take aim. The plane flies through the bursts of flak. Inside, Bergman still winces in pain. The woman and her bold assistant hear the alarm. In Grant's cockpit, Bissell points out the window.
There's the building!
They fly low over a small town, dominated at its far end by a grey stone church. Beyond it is a white mansion house surrounded by green fields. Grant opens fire on the anti-aircraft gunners outside it. A German officer is shot in the face. Inside, the blonde woman moves towards the door. Grant opens the Mosquito's cargo doors, revealing two large bombs. He presses the launch switch, and the bombs fall through the air. The house explodes. In the room where Bergman is lying, the roof falls in, and there is a gigantic burst of flame. Grant's plane heads away from the scene. But the anti-aircraft gunners score a direct hit on the cockpit. Grant wipes the blood from his cheek. The plane keeps going, leaving a trail of smoke behind it. At RAF HQ, Adams checks a clipboard patiently. Grant's damaged plane approaches the airfield.
Blue leader to control. Blue leader to control.
Adams joins Barrett by the radio.
The wheel's down, but one light's showing. I don't think it's locked.
Barrett picks up a red telephone.
All crash crews. All crash crews stand by for emergency landing.
An officer strides onto the roof of the airbase and fires off a flare. Adams runs out of the building and into his jeep. As Grant's plane approaches the runway, Gillibrand and Scott also dash outside to watch. In the cockpit...
Hang on, Bissell. This might be a little rough.
Bissell nods blearily. The plane's wheels touch down on the runway. The plane judders over the grass until the wheels buckle. Then it skims across the earth, throwing up clouds of dust. Gillibrand looks on, appalled.
Oh, God!
Scott and Gillibrand hail a fire truck. Grant forces open the cockpit window above his head and climbs out of the burning craft. His jacket catches fire, so he runs along the wing and dives onto the grass, rolling over and over to extinguish the flames. Adams pulls up in his jeep. Grant prepares to go back for Bissell, but Adams grabs hold of him. The two men struggle, but Scott and Gillibrand come to Adams' aid. Grant breaks free of them, but they manage to pull him back. An army ambulance arrives on the scene. They pull the struggling Grant away from the plane. The firemen now spray the blaze with water. Adams and Gillibrand have to hold Grant tightly. They watch as two firemen crawl along the wing and hammer at the cockpit window. The firemen drag Bissell from the cockpit, and four men run over with a stretcher. Bissell is laid out on a stretcher and covered with a red blanket. The men lift him up and put him in the back of an ambulance. The ambulance trundles away across the grass as the last flames are doused with water.
And you're quite sure it was Gestapo headquarters you hit?
Yes, sir.
And we can assume that Bergman is dead.
Yes, sir.
Grant, it may seem ironic to you, but I'm going to recommend you for an award for what you did today. You may have saved the whole operation.
Shall I break the news to Bergman's sister, Roy? I shan't mention your part, of course.
No, I'll tell her.
Davis crosses to the map of Norway. Barrett looks sympathetically at Grant. Davis turns to address them.
Gentlemen, I can't take a chance on anything else going wrong. I'm going to move up the operation. Take off 0330 hours tomorrow morning.
But, sir, what about the bombs?
They'll be here tonight. Adams, get in touch with the Ling. Tell them to plan their attack for tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
At what time?
Daybreak.
Adams leaves the room.
Grant, you better get that wound, St. John.
Grant has a gash on his left cheek. He gets up and staggers outside. Barrett looks down sadly. Outside, the sun shines down. Grant, wearing his bomber jacket and peaked cap, strides along wearily. He's heading towards a line of ambulances when he passes Mary.
Sir?
He turns slowly. Her cheeks are wet with tears.
How's a man going to be without a face and blind? Awful, isn't it, sir?
Grant hangs his head and walks on. A tractor pulls a line of metal trailers loaded with bombs. It moves slowly along a country lane, escorted by soldiers on motorbikes. It passes through the gates of the RAF compound, watched by the sentries and a solemn-faced Barrett. Two men watch the tractor from the anti-aircraft post outside HQ. In Hilda's room at the Black Swan.
I killed him, Hilda. He was in the building. And I knew it.
Hilda stands in front of Bergman's photograph, breathing deeply.
You knew they were torturing him. You stopped it.
She turns to face him. Her hair is swept back from her forehead, and there are tears in her eyes.
Eric cannot thank you, Roy. So, I thank you for him.
She collapses into his arms, burying her head in his neck. He kisses her eyelid gently. Surprised, she looks at him wide-eyed.
Another mission?
He nods. She bows her head and steps away from him. She holds her fingers to her mouth. Grant watches her, his face a picture of concern.
I will wait for you.
She runs into his arms.
Please come back. Please do come back.
She draws back and looks into his eyes, her hands on his shoulders.
Got it, Dave.
She nods and holds her head against his cheek. Then he pulls away and walks to the door. Hilda is left alone in her room. She perches on the corner of her bed, clutching the covers with her hands. Then, she buries her face in her lap. a model of the fjord with red marker dots placed on the rocks.
Now, the bombs you'll be using are what we call earthquake bombs. And that is literally their purpose, to cause an earthquake,
which will bring down the overhanging section of this mountain and bury that factory which the Germans have built there under that.
The airmen are all gathered around Davis.
All right, gentlemen. You may return to your seats.
The airmen sit down at classroom-like desks. Davis, Adams, Barrett, and Grant climb onto a raised stage at the back of the hall.
Squadron Leader Adams will now continue with the briefing.
Adams pulls a cord and opens some curtains at the back of the stage, revealing a map of Norway.
This is the flight plan from Sutton Crabbe. By following this dogleg, the chances of losing the surprise element over the sea are reduced. If you are detected, this route will lead the enemy to believe that you're on a coastal shipping strike.
Wing Commander Grant, anything to add?
I would just like to remind the men that we will drop the bombs within 50 yards of each other at 10-second intervals.
The geologists calculate that 12 bombs of this size, exploding in this pattern, will break loose the overhang.
Skipper, excuse me, I'd like to ask a question.
Go ahead.
Isn't it likely that each plane could be blown apart by the explosion of the bomb in front of it?
Not if our calculations are correct.
I hope you got a good calculator.
Scott.
With all those gun emplacements, the flak's going to be murderous, isn't it, sir?
The Norwegian underground will attack those emplacements at exactly 0630.
Which means that you should be entering the fjord not earlier than 0655 and not later than 0705.
Squadron Leader Adams.
Time check your watches. It's coming up 2:47 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Check. Your call sign is Everest. The code for the successful completion of the operation is Vesuvius.
Sounds like that mountain could turn into a bloody big volcano.
Yes, we hope the Germans will be under it. Any further questions?
Yes, sir. I've got a question. Just a bit of curiosity, really, but what does that factory make?
You'll be told that when you get back. This much I can tell you, though. No squadron has ever been sent out on a more critically important operation.
The men look at him solemnly.
That's all, gentlemen.
The men start to leave.
Except, good luck.
The men put on their peak caps, collect their bomber jackets and flight gear, and leave the hall. They run from a dugout building and over to their planes. Grant rubs the polished surface of a bomb and pats it affectionately. He checks his watch and walks over to his Jeep. The technicians wheel the bombs to his plane, ready for loading. Grant drives past the planes over to a table and picks up a map. Barrett comes over to him, holding some flight gear.
Well, Roy.
What's that?
At last, I've got Davis's permission and the medicals to come along. Without a command, of course.
You're a little late, aren't you?
What do you mean?
Well, you haven't been on any practice missions. We take off in a half an hour.
Look, I've studied every detail of this strike from beginning to end. I know I can follow you in.
Yeah, why do you want to risk your neck?
I am damned if I know, Roy.
Okay, Don. You can take Jones's place. You'll lead Red Section.
Thanks.
How do you feel now?
Scared. And you?
Scared.
Grant collects his gear from the back of the Jeep, and he and Barrett go to their planes. Meanwhile, in Norway, the resistance radio operator listens to a signal on his headphones. Johansson and the other men hurry to the radio operator's side.
They have moved up MD.
Johansson looks anxious.
They want us to attack at 06:30 hours.
It is time to send Matterhorn. We are starting the attack.
A man starts throwing rifles to each resistance member. Another hands out ammunition. The men file outside as the radio operator taps his signal. The sun is low in the sky, a blur behind the clouds, as the planes head towards their target. They fly in formation, three lines of four planes each. On the ground, the armed resistance force move along a country lane in the murky twilight. They wear jackets and woolen hats. The road is lined with pine trees and bushes, and the grass slopes upwards either side. Ahead of them, some German soldiers are hiding in the bushes. One prepares to throw a mortar. The mortar explodes right in front of the resistance. Several are thrown to the ground. Others run for cover and start to return fire. One man runs limping from the scene. The German officer orders his men into pursuit. Then, he walks through the bodies of the now utterly defeated resistance group. Johansson is among the dead. Back in the cave, the radio operator and another man are cleaning weapons when the limping man appears in the entrance. The radio operator runs to his equipment. His comrade brings a medical kit over to the wounded man. Behind him, a gun pokes through the camouflage frame that hangs over the entrance to the cave. The wounded man and his friend are shot to pieces. The radio operator ducks, still tapping out his signal. A German throws a mortar inside. After it explodes, soldiers pile in, machine guns blazing. The radio operator finally leaves his equipment. He grabs a rifle but is shot down. Another resistance member raises his gun but is blasted against the wall. He topples forward onto a fire. Outside, another four resistance men are hurled to the ground by a mortar blast. While in the forest, the Germans lay an ambush for another group, mowing them down with machine guns. More resistance men run towards a fence, but Germans appear behind them and shoot them down. One young man tries to haul himself up on the fence. He's within sight of the German factory, a giant semicircular platform cut into the face of a cliff, but he collapses to the ground. In the RAF operations room, a clock shows it's 5:10. Adams notes the time and takes out a cigarette. Davis examines the map of Norway anxiously. Adams offers Davis a cigarette, but he shakes his head. Their radio operator looks at the inactive Morse receiver on the desk in front of him. Meanwhile, the planes speed inexorably towards their destination, still flying in formation. In the resistance cave, the body of the man who fell on the fire smokes gently. Crates of arms are scattered all over the floor, and the entrance is no longer covered by the camouflage frame. The corpse of the radio operator lies in the corner. The planes are still crossing the sea. In the RAF operations room, Davis drums his fingers on the table. Adams pins a ribbon to the map that represents the flight path from Britain to Norway. They stare anxiously at the clock. The time is now 5:05. Hopkinson is beside Grant in the cockpit.
Landfall 9 minutes, Skipper. Dead on 07:03.
Hopkinson taps out a Morse signal. In the RAF base.
ETA 0703, sir. 633, Operation Control. It's for you, sir.
Davis here. Yes?
He looks alarmed.
What?
Adams removes his glasses.
I see. Thank you. Intelligence reports the Germans ambushed the Ling, trailed some of the survivors to their hideout, destroyed everything. Arms, communications, men, the lot.
He looks at the clock. 3 minutes to seven.
When's their landfall?
0703.
Send this message to Wing Commander Grant. Ling destroyed. Enemy anti-aircraft intact. You have permission to abort.
In Grant's cockpit.
Charlie?
Abort.
Grant looks reflectively out of the cockpit window.
Blue leader to all sections. Enemy anti-aircraft intact. Keep your eyes open. We're going in.
Hopkinson looks up, surprised.
You know, Skipper, I'm going to recommend you for a medal. And when it comes, I'm going to pin it right in your...
What?
On your tail.
They spot the opening to the fjord.
There's Norway. And you can have it.
The planes fly on towards the distant cliffs. They enter the mouth of the fjord. Cliffs rise up on either side, and they pass over small islands in the water. But there are German anti-aircraft guns on the bank. Grant returns fire. He soars past the anti-aircraft gunners, bursts of flak peppering the cliff face behind his plane. Grant judders from the vibrations of his own machine gun. One anti-aircraft nest is blown apart. Hopkinson looks up through the cockpit window and sees a pack of enemy craft above them.
Got bandits up ahead, boys. Got bandits up above. Keep down low.
Scott, Singh, Gillibrand and Barrett follow Grant down the fjord. It seems to end in a giant cliff face straight ahead of them. Grant opens his cargo doors. They can now see the factory halfway down the cliff face. The plane soars through bursts of flak and banks over the factory. Grant presses the launch button. The bomb explodes under the overhanging rock at the top of the cliff. A German officer watches the rock in alarm. Another plane approaches the factory, but the co-pilot is slumped wounded in his seat. Reynolds revives, but the anti-aircraft guns take out the pilot. The plane smashes into the rocks. In Grant's cockpit, Hopkinson points at an enemy plane.
Blue leader to white section. Coming back in to cover your run.
In Scott's plane,
Roger, blue leader!
Grant dives back down into the fjord. Meanwhile, Scott approaches the cliff face. Grant zooms past him and fires on the anti-aircraft guns. He blows one anti-aircraft nest to pieces. On Scott's plane, Evan's forehead is bleeding. Scott hits the launch button.
Hit it!
He scores a direct hit on the cliff face. He pulls on the yoke and flies clear of the rock walls. Davis.
Four hits. Three aircraft lost. Two crews ditched in fjord.
Two more planes head down the fjord. The anti-aircraft gunners continue to fire on them, but another Mosquito gets through and bombs the cliff face. Grant flies upwards towards enemy planes.
7 o'clock, Clark. Bandits at 7 o'clock.
A German plane dives into position behind a Mosquito.
Dive, Clark.
But the German plane opens fire, its wing-mounted machine guns blazing. The Mosquito is blown apart. Grant flies on grimly. Another Mosquito heads down the fjord. The bursts of flak jolt the cockpit, but the plane keeps going. Grant speaks into his flight mask.
Come on, Green Second, you're way behind. Come on, Green Second.
But Green Second is taken out by the anti-aircraft gunners. Once again, Grant descends into the fjord. He takes out another machine gun nest. Two more Mosquitoes run the gauntlet of the anti-aircraft fire and head down the fjord. Singh's left wing catches fire, but he flies on. Singh takes the launch button from his co-pilot, but he's hit by machine gun fire and falls over the controls. His co-pilot tries to gain control of the plane, but it careers towards the rocks. It hits the overhanging cliff face. A stream of rocks trickles down. Meanwhile, Gillibrand heads for the target. His co-pilot is frozen with fear. Gillibrand grabs the launch button. The bomb hits the target, but there is a fire behind Gillibrand in his cockpit. The co-pilot finally snaps out of it, but an enemy plane bears down on them, machine guns blazing. Gillibrand returns fire and blows it out of the sky. Another German plane swoops down on the Mosquito. Gillibrand's co-pilot is caught in the crossfire and slumps to the floor. The two craft head straight towards each other, only breaking to the side at the last moment. Grant speaks into his flight mask.
Break for the fjord. Gillibrand, break for the fjord.
Gillibrand continues to fire on the enemy plane, but his ammunition runs out. He presses uselessly on the fire button as the German craft bears down on him remorselessly. Gillibrand's plane explodes in Grant's cockpit.
How many hits?
Six.
The overhanging rock still stands.
Oh, that log never go.
Send it.
At the RAF operations room.
Six. Direct. Hits. Nine. Aircraft. Lost. One. Bomb. Left.
Now Barrett flies his plane down the fjord, but the anti-aircraft guns take out his right propeller. He opens fire on the Germans and destroys an entire crew of gunners.
I'm coming in on target now! With an engine jet!
His plane leaves a trail of smoke behind it. He grimaces with the strain of keeping the craft under control. His co-pilot holds up the launch button. The bomb hits just underneath the overhanging rock, but Barrett's wing catches fire. He tries desperately to steer past the high rock walls, but ends up plunging the craft into the water below. In Grant's cockpit.
Skipper! It's going! It's going!
Finally, the rock starts to teeter over the cliff. It crumbles, and huge boulders rain down on the factory below. Scott smiles as the factory is completely buried. The German gun crews watch in horror as more rocks break away and plunge towards them. A huge ball of flame erupts from underneath the fallen rocks. Hopkinson taps out another Morse signal. In the RAF operations room,
Vesuvius, sir. Vesuvius.
In Grant's plane.
All right, Scott, let's get the hell out of here. You lead and I'll cover.
Scott and Grant fly towards the sea, still dodging the bullets from the anti-aircraft guns. A fire breaks out in the cockpit behind Scott. Suddenly, the windows shatter and he jerks back in agony. The plane is blown to smithereens. Grant fires on the German gunners and kills some men. His plane takes a hit behind the cockpit and smoke trails out behind it, but Grant manages to keep going. The plane's engines fail. An old couple watch as Grant lands the craft in a grassy meadow. The plane's wheels buckle, and it crashes into the earth, black smoke pouring from its burning wings. Hopkinson unties his harness. The old man is carrying an axe. He runs over to the plane. The plane's shell blackens as the fire takes hold. Hopkinson opens the cockpit window above his head and climbs out. Grant's arms flop out of the window. He tries to haul himself out, but slumps forward, exhausted. Hopkinson shakes him. The old man runs forward, drops the axe, and helps Hopkinson drag Grant out of the cockpit. They pull him across the grass away from the blaze. Hopkinson and the old man kneel over Grant. Grant looks up at Hopkinson blearily.
You okay?
Yes, Skipper. Can you move? Where does it hurt?
All over.
Grant smiles and tries to sit up, but his eyes close and his head falls back on the grass. In the RAF operations room...
I can't raise him, sir.
Keep trying.
Yes. He's coming on the line now, sir.
Davis takes the phone from Adams.
Davis here, sir. Vesuvius, sir. Complete success. Thank you, sir.
Davis looks solemnly at Adams. The two of them leave the room. Outside, they walk away from the building and stand by the road behind the aircraft hangars.
The rockets won't happen.
Of course they'll happen. They won't start tomorrow, or this month, or on D-Day, and that's important.
Then what's it all add up to?
All their sacrifice.
A successful operation.
But they're probably all dead. All 633 Squadron.
You can't kill a squadron.
Davis walks towards his personal car. A uniformed female chauffeur holds the door open for him. Adams watches as the car turns and drives away. The end. Audio description by ITFC.